especial de El Clásico.
The Clásico Special.
It's Haller Radio. I'm George Qureshi, editor of Haller Magazine, and today we have for you a story about an extremely public, exceedingly ugly breakup. In the year 2000, Portuguese winger Luis Figo transferred from Barcelona to Real Madrid. It was just months before he'd be named European Footballer of the Year, a couple more months before he'd be named World Footballer of the Year, and Barcelona fans were not happy.
De hacer posible lo que en el fútbol hace tan solo unas semanas parecía imposible, que Luis Figo, una azulgrana de pro, fichara por el eterno rival, el Real Madrid.
Es Luis Figo.
El nombre de... del Real Madrid.
Vamos a ver por qué esto es... Al vestuario, Luis Figo ha dado un balonazo al balón.
I remember the moment Figo signed for Real Madrid as a really tough moment. I saw him as an emerging star and as a leader of the team and the club, and we really needed that role.
Figo shot! Oh, just blew it!
So when he left, it was a very disappointing moment, and I remember crying. It hurt so much because being a Barca player for us, it's more than belonging to a team. It's more of an identity and you feel the colors.
But on the other side, I also think that it was good that he did not stay in the club.
Betraying a nation.
Persons like this, I don't like them to be, you know, the head of the institution I love. And probably when he did that with Barca, I was blind. I saw that he was doing it, but I also wanted him to stay because he was playing really good. He was shining on the pitch. But you know, with more perspective, I can say now that I'm happy he did not continue in Barcelona.
Ah, El Clásico. It's coming up on Sunday. And, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid have been playing each other for so long. And these days it seems so often that it feels to me anyway like it takes something extra special to make it stick in your memory. Well, our producer, Matt Nelson, has a journalist friend who was at one of the most memorable Clásicos in decades. He wasn't there as a journalist, though. He actually bribed his way into the stadium. We tried to get him to tell the story by scripting it out and voicing it by himself, but it felt a little stiff, so Matt asked him to ditch the script, crack open a bottle of wine, and tell the story to his fiancée. This is Danny Scott and Jess Walter.
Hi, Matt. This is Danny and Jess recording not live. We both had a good glug of wine and a bowl of vanilla ice cream, so we're riding a kind of alcohol sugar high. We'll just go for it and then I guess you'll edit it. So, take one. Hi, I'm Danny Scott. I'm an Edinburgh-based journalist. I'll try again, because Jess is looking at me and it's making me weird. Hi, I'm Danny Scott. I'm an Edinburgh-based journalist and general football lover. And I've settled down tonight to tell my beautiful fiancée, Jess, about the story when I once paid to sneak into the Nou Camp to watch El Clásico between Barcelona and Real Madrid in 2002.
I've never heard this story before.
Well, you're not particularly interested in football.
No, but I want to hear this story.
Well, it began in the autumn of 2002. I was a 22-year-old sprite who'd just finished a data entry job for 10 months to save up and go to Barcelona to do a 5-week intensive teacher training course.
Okay, I know that much about you. Carry on.
It was a 5-week course in central Barcelona, and a few of the guys in the course had football and hating the course in common, and we bonded and ended up at a Villarreal match, Villarreal, 2 weeks later, which are nicknamed the Yellow Submarines in Spain, and watched Barcelona defeat Villarreal unimpressively 1-0. And it was memorable because it was the first time I'd ever been to the Nou Camp on a game night. I'd been there for the tour. We could only afford the cheap tickets, so we went right up to six rows from the back.
Oh my god.
On the top third tier where you could...
Did you have binoculars?
You didn't need it really. The stadium's okay in that respect, but the players were a long, long way away and it was quite hard to see individual faces. But we could hear a group of Barca fans a few rows behind us who screamed out throughout the whole match this memorable ditty about Figo who'd betrayed Barcelona.
Are you going to sing it to me now?
Yeah, it went something like this.
Figo, 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 é um português. Figo, 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 puta, é.
Which pretty much translates as Figo, 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 he's Portuguese. Figo, 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 he's a puta, which is, yes, a female part.
Okay, I don't have. Okay, right. That was a bit rude.
Yes.
And is that people that are chanting that song on his side? As in, for him, pro him.
No, that was they would not call him that if they were fans of him. Now, Figo had been Barcelona's darling. He was the hero of the city. He was the golden child, and everyone loved him. There were some things going on behind the scenes, and there were rumours that Figo might leave. But Figo came out and made a public statement that he would never leave Barcelona. Was if you cut him in half, he'd be red and blue stripes, and he would never leave his beloved Barcelona. And 3 weeks later, he disappeared and appeared at Real Madrid, the Bernabeu in Madrid, Barcelona's arch rivals.
He was a cheating. Oh, so and so.
He was a Judas. He wasn't even playing that night. We went and saw them, and they were still singing about him the whole match. So 2 weeks later, Madrid were coming to town, and it was Figo's first return to the Nou Camp to face Barcelona. So the city and the cauldron of the Nou Camp was at boiling point.
So wait a minute, I just want to recap. Figo was coming back to face Barcelona as a member of Real Madrid's team.
See.
Okay, I'm keeping up. Right, okay. Turncoat, sorry.
Yes, he was a turncoat, one of the greatest turncoats in history.
My goodness.
There's a huge history of rivalry between Barcelona and Real Madrid. That's too deep to go into now, but Real Madrid was always seen as the darling of General Franco's regime, and the Catalans have a litany of historical grievances against Real Madrid. And even today, when they seem to play each other about six times a year, it's still seen as Il Clásico, Il Grande Clásico, the big match, okay. The big classic, where all of Spain and the rest of the world now, because both teams have the best players in the world, stop to watch these two teams play. It's a rich, rich rivalry.
Okay, wow.
So that we had to be at that match, basically. We had to be at that match. And everyone we spoke to, from the teachers on the course to people we'd met while we were in Barcelona, said, yeah, I've been in Barcelona for X amount of years, and I've only ever met one person that's managed to get a ticket. Yeah, you've got absolutely no chance of gold dust. You should just watch it on TV or find a good bar. But we were young, or youngish, and naive, and we thought, oh, what's stopping us? Let's just go down to the stadium.
So you didn't have a ticket?
We didn't have a ticket, but we thought, let's see what happens. And, you know, sometimes you can go to a ground on the day and someone's walking about with their hand in the air and said, oh, four tickets for sale. So we
Can I ask how much you were willing to pay for a ticket?
Well, we had that discussion on the way to the stadium, and I think we all said something in the region of 100 euros each, which would translate as maybe 1.5 times that in dollars. I'm not sure, maybe not as much as that. But we're all willing to pay about 100 euros each. We had the British Mexican in our locker who had fluent Spanish and was willing to use it to charm our way into the stadium. So we arrived at 2 p.m. on the day of the match, and there's people standing around there 7-8 hours before kickoff. Wow. And a couple of touts.
Anyone selling tickets?
So we thought we'd try it. And
as in try just seeing how far you can get.
Yeah, we chanced it. We spoke to a swarthy gent with really harsh sandpaper-like stubble and eyes that had seen things. He'd seen things I don't want to see, or things he can't unsee. And he offered to get us tickets, inverted commas, for 125 euros each, so 500 euros in total, if we met him back at the stadium such and such a time before kickoff. So we spent an afternoon sort of tensely debating what was going to happen, is he going to turn up or whatnot, and decided we'll go, and we'll go sober, we'll keep our powder dry, and just look. Well, we thought we had a chance to get in, so we took that chance. And lo and behold, about 8 o'clock on a chilly, dark November evening with the noise all around us and the smell of diesel smoke from all the scooters that you had in Barcelona, the guy arrived in a cliché black leather jacket, looking shifty, basically.
Okay.
And he said, follow me, follow me. So we did, and he walked towards the stadium into the fluorescent security lights that surrounded the stadium. We were walking around outside the main stand, and there's a lot of well-heeled people there, and a lot of women, actually. A real gender split, which was really lovely to see. And then four of us looking nervous, walking behind this guy in a leather jacket, who was staring towards the stadium gates to each turnstile. Just kept walking and walking and walking with his eyes turned right the whole time.
Kept walking towards this turnstile?
No, kept walking past each turnstile. So it's okay. Like we must have gone past about 20 or 30 turnstiles before he spotted one. And
so he was circling round the outside of this entrance system and you were kind of in his wake?
Yeah, yeah, okay. We're like seagulls following the trawler in Cantona's words.
Okay.
And eventually he seemed to spot someone, one of the stewards, at the turnstile, and we made a beeline for him, and they made eye contact, meaningful eye contact, as in you'll get a cut of this money eye contact. And then he produced a ticket from his pocket. Our tout produced a ticket from his pocket, which is a barcoded, what looked like a credit card, which is probably a season ticket, and just went beep, 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 beep. And then five of us went through the turnstile and we're in the ground. Guy led us to our seats, which were 8 rows back from the centre circle on the lowest concourse, which would have cost a few hundred euros, I'm sure, regardless of touts. And yeah, we went and sat down, 4 seats available, and we just sort of looked at each other and thought, yeah, these are definitely not our seats. These are definitely not our seats. And about 3 or 4 minutes later, two well-heeled elderly couples turned up, one in their blue wool coats and the women with their furry collars, just sort of looking at us thinking, you're going to have to move. So we did. So we're like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Let's just walk around the stadium. Let's just do laps of the stadium.
Sorry, being female, is this an event that people would actually get dressed up for?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Okay, what were you wearing?
Oh, I mean, dressed up within reason. They'd get dressed up warm because it was November,
right, okay.
The end of November. So we thought, well, we'll just do laps of the bottom concourse right around the pitch. We'll just go round and round and round and round. So we walked up halfway up the concourse and then hit a brick wall because it's all set in sections. So we had to walk back down the concourse and then walk back up the concourse and back down, killing time until kickoff and hoping that no one sees us and thinks, right, these guys are properly at it.
Yeah, they've got no seats. They're just doing laps.
Yeah, they're just doing half laps. Yeah. They're doing shuttle runs. But we had to stay in constant motion like sharks, never sleeping, just in case we got caught. But then on about the second shuttle run, we noticed the aisles in between all the seats were starting to fill up with people as well as the seats.
And are these all people that have got into the grounds illegally?
Yes. So finally, we're anonymous. So we went to the south stand where the ultras sit, which turned out to be an important choice, and sat down on the steps, wet steps, ready for the match to kick off.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on, the first part of that plan being hatched and...
Yeah, we were fairly proud of ourselves and just sort of... It was like a slideshow of everyone's face going past us saying, you'll never get in, when there's no chance. I've never heard of anybody getting in. And then we were right sitting there in the new camp ready
looking,
for...
Yeah, euphoric.
And then we got closer and closer to the kickoff and then the moment came. And the players ran out on the pitch and the noise was utterly deafening and people were setting off flares all around us and screaming and it was kind of loud enough to make your vision swim and your pants fill up. It was it was quite something. It really was quite something. Shook you to the core. And then the match kicked off in Barcelona.
At the same time, I can imagine that kind of scale of noise would also make you feel sort of like transcended, like you were soaring.
Absolutely. And Nou Camp is a proper cathedral of football.
Wow.
It was fantastic. Until the match started, and the match played out really, really uneventfully.
The whole match?
The first half of the match was really uneventful. I can't really remember much of it, apart from occasionally Roberto Carlos clearing the ball upfield from left back. That's about it. And then half time, stand up, stretch the bum off. That was all fine.
Wait, and you must be thinking, hang on, we've just paid €500 and actually this feels like nothing to write home about and we could be enjoying this with a lot of money in our pockets to spend on pints or... I don't know.
Yeah, so you're hoping against hope that you've paid this money, and I guess like any football fan at a big match who's paid a lot of money, it's just hoping for that memory, that little something that's going to make it all worthwhile. And
tells me that you wouldn't be telling this story if there wasn't that nugget.
There was a nugget, but it wasn't a beautiful flowering of a match in the second half that ended 4-4. It was much uglier than that. It was involving Figo, the Portuguese puta.
The Portuguese puta who had recently jumped ship.
Who had recently jumped ship and was back at the Nou Camp for the first time to face the ire of the Barcelona fans. And because we'd found ourselves amongst the ultras, Figo had to walk directly towards us on the corner and we're in amongst the hardcore element.
So Figo was pretty much doing the walk of shame.
I don't think Figo's ever done a walk of shame. Figo was taking the corners, which meant he had to come towards the fans at the Nou Camp. The Nou Camp's right up against the pitch, and Figo was having to walk to take corners right in front of the hardcore element where we were sitting. The first couple of times he came over with his chest puffed out,
like
people, not like a peacock, but like a proud man. As in, I've done nothing wrong. He walked towards the corner and little bits started to fly towards him. So the odd lighter would fly through the air, a few plastic bottles. And he'd just shake it off, kick them to the side of the pitch, take his corner. And then another corner would come. And it got worse and worse and worse until at one point it was a real volley of detritus getting thrown at people. Lighters, plastic bottles. It was reported in the press that it was a couple of glass bottles there, half-drunk bottles of whiskey. And Carlos Puyol, one of the Carlos Puyol, one of the heroes of the Barcelona team, was standing at the crowd saying, "Look, guys, stop, stop, this is too much, too much." But nothing would stop him because it was just, at that point, the dam had broke. And all this hatred and frustration of being a football fan and powerless football fan. And these.
And probably something to do with the fact that the match actually up until this point really hadn't given them much to just sort of like let off steam about. So it's like, right, let's target him.
Yeah, and at which point, for us, the match was finally becoming memorable, yeah, but for all the wrong reasons. Until at one point, a strange hand from somewhere in the crowd sent the severed head of a suckling pig flying into the air towards Figo.
Godfather!
I know.
Where on earth? What?
So someone that night had thought, I know, I hate Figo, so I'm going to sever a suckling pig's head and launch it at him when he takes a corner.
That, I mean, I'm just trying to think of the logistics of smuggling. When, right, give me it in size. Is it like two clenched fists? Is it?
Two clenched fists with your thumb stuck out for the snout.
My God.
And it was just, when you see the pictures, there's this bright pink dead pig head with its snout pointing up in the air with the bright green grass underneath that's been lit by the floodlights.
And what was Figo's response?
Figo's response was almost disdainful at times. I can't remember if he saw the pig's head, or I think the pig's head was captured more by the press in the aftermath, because there was bottles and lighters and glass bottles everywhere, and at the time I think more people,
so he might have just thought that it was a shoe or something, like something of like a substantial size being chucked at him.
Maybe he thought it was someone should throw in their shoe, their zapatos. But it got to the point where he was taking his corners and taking his time to take these corners, that the rain of litter getting thrown at him was so bad that they took all the players off the pitch. I mean, where do you go from a pig suckling head but back down the tunnel until things have calmed down?
Oh my God.
So we're sitting there on our wet seat, having 500 euros down.
I'm going to ask, so were you close to where the suckling pig got launched? Or the suckling pig's head, sorry.
Yeah, we're, I think, a couple of sections away.
And was there a big screen that, like, gave you a close-up of this head?
No, there wasn't a big screen. There were big pictures in the newspapers the next day.
So this is the memory that, like, you would have seen something sort of being, I guess, yeah.
We saw lots of stuff getting thrown off.
But
we saw lots of things getting thrown, one of which was probably this suckling pig's head.
Okay.
Spinning through the air and landing by Figo's feet. And then the ref took them off for 30 minutes.
Los jugadores del Real Madrid se meten al vestuario. Luis Figo ha dado un balonazo al balón.
We were thinking, wow, we've paid all this money to come to a game that's going to get stopped for people throwing a whole manner of stuff at Figo at 0-0. And Zidane's not even playing. And Ronaldo's not even playing. So we're feeling a bit sorry for ourselves and wanting the players to come back out. But also kind of aware that no matter what happens football-wise, it's going to be a press-worthy match that we can say we've been at.
Yeah.
And the players did come out and they did play out the rest of the match, and it was pretty turgid 0-0. But by that point, like a toddler having a tantrum, the football fans had calmed down a bit.
And do you think part of that was because they kind of thought, I don't know, after the suckling pig hit the playing field, they just thought, you know, sort of a similar thing to you. Like, actually, this match is kind of entertaining for the wrong reasons, but let's just enjoy the rest of the ride.
I'm not even sure they were aware of this. I'm not even sure they were aware of the suckling pig at that point. But it was there, along with a lot of other stuff, and not much else on display. And that was the Clásico we ended up at. The final whistle went, and we shuffled out with lots of other fans who were slightly disappointed at what they'd seen. We saw two great teams at perhaps the wrong time, but we saw a hell of a lot more. So it was probably worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like it was.
Certainly was. I'll have to take you along to the next one.
No, thanks.
Sorry, Matt, that's probably 30 minutes too much, but...
Let's try again.
Do you want to try again?
Yeah. I think we need to.
Okay. I'm going to get more wine.
I might have had enough.
Okay, I maybe had enough.
Okay.
Which is Jess's way of saying I'm slurring words. Should we go for a brief?
Yeah, switch off for a minute.
A gigantic thank you to Danny and especially his fiancée Jess, who had to sit through that story I don't know how many times. The voices you heard at the top, speaking about their feelings when Figo left Barcelona, belong to, and I apologize if I butcher these, Malena Barajas, Xavier Beltran, Janina Brugada, Raimon Puig-Jenner, and Aaron Plattenberg helped set them up. Big thank you to all of them. The music in this episode was from Chris Zabriskie, Tres Tristes Tangos, The Silent Partner, and Plus Plus, and of course, the Howler Singers, led by Lindsay Elliott. Howler Radio is produced by Matthew Nelson. Now, Matt does such a wonderful job, and we wish we could produce Howler Radio more frequently, but the type of show we've created, you know, narrative-driven, lots of sound effects and music, it's really labor-intensive. So I'm excited to announce that starting later this week, we will be releasing a new podcast. It's called Dummy, and it's a conversation between editors and friends of Howler Magazine. I'm very excited about it. The first episode will be out later this week, like I said, and our very first guest is the writer Sid Lowe, whose excellent, excellent book about Real Madrid and Barcelona has recently come out in the United States. It's called Fear and Loathing in La Liga, which pretty accurately describes the intrigue and turmoil generated by what is, for me, and I'm sure I'm not alone, the most fascinating rivalry in all of sports. You can sample the book in the latest issue of Howler, where we have an excerpt. That's at howlermagazine.com. Please subscribe to Howler Radio in iTunes or whatever podcasting service you use. Tell friends about it, leave a review, leave a rating. Dummy will be appearing in the very same feed. I hope you like it. Okay, that's it for now. I'm George Qureshi, and until next time, thank you for listening.
Hi there, it's Matt here. I produce the show. I just wanted to tack a quick message on to the end of this podcast. Just to say a big congratulations to Jess and Danny on their engagement. When I started editing the piece, I didn't actually know that the big D had popped the question. So I'm super excited for them both. They're such lovely, lovely people. So Jess and Danny, love you guys loads. And yeah, come across and visit me. And thanks again for lending your voices to today's episodes. And it's one of the best ones I think we've done, and I love working on it. So cheers, guys. Bye.
How long is this meant to be?
5 minutes.
This is meant to be 5 minutes.